Welcome. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, everyone.
Welcome to episode 217 of Live at the Hive. I'm your host, Stacey DeSantis.
I'm Courtney Castle.
And I'm Paige Gervais.
And this week, we're going to talk about the five do's and five don'ts of social media for small businesses. So let's get into it. This will be a good episode just to kind of run through some of the, you know, things I think we take for granted that we just kind of go through the motions doing. But if you're a small business and you're looking to leverage social media for your brand and build a community, we can help you out.
Yeah, 100%, Stacey. Like a lot of small business owners are managing their own channels and things like that too, right? So it's hard to know what's a faux pas and what's, you know, funny, that kind of a fine line that you walk, but yeah.
Exactly. Okay, so let's get into it. So Paige, why don't you introduce?
Yeah, I'll walk.
Oh. Can you not hear her as well?
No, I think we lost Paige for just
a second
there.
Oh, dear. That's the fun about doing a live show, right? Okay, well, Courtney, why don't you take the reins?
Yeah, so five do's and don'ts of social media. We're going to give some specific examples for small businesses, whether you're an all-in-one marketer managing social channels or perhaps a business owner managing your own. These are five rules that are going to apply all the time if you're trying to grow your channel and not necessarily like at a certain pace, but authentically. You don't just want likes from your social channels, you want leads as well. So these are really great rules to kind of build out your social media strategy based on.
Exactly. And I'm just welcoming all the people that are tuning in. So hello, April. Hey, Pippa. Hey, Dan, Duran. Great to see you all. And as we walk you through these tips and tricks of the five do's and don'ts, please feel free to ask us questions in real time. We'll definitely answer any questions that come through. And yeah, and just even if you want, you can just say hello. All right. Oh, hey, Yagna.
Yeah. Yeah, drop a hi if you have a question about your own social strategy or something you're uncertain about. I know we get asked a lot of times about hashtags and all sorts of things like that. So any questions you have, drop them and we'll answer yours specifically. Yeah.
All right. Let's get into it, ladies. This is the fun show this week. Our fearless leader is on vacation. So
yeah, a rare no Dan show.
I know. So the ladies are in the house. All right, Paige, are you with us again? I think so. Oh, no, her audio is still not quite working. So I'll introduce the first one and it's fun enough, it's, you know, do introduce yourself. So if you're new to social media, it's really important if you're going to introduce your brand or yourself that you talk about the why of your business. So why are you in the business of selling various products? Why do you feel that your business could offer solutions or provide value to your audience? So this is a really great way to kind of kickstart your account. You know, you can add things like your company values, maybe what makes you an expert in a particular field, the favorite thing that you love about serving your community or what you do and the service that you offer. So it's really great to just kind of, you know, lay the groundwork before you jump in and start, getting into the weeds with maybe your content, or, you know, you don't want to go in for the hard sell. We always talk about this, about the importance of warming up your audience. So you want to make sure that you're taking the time to be, you know, it's kind of like when you go on a date, Courtney? Like, you're not going to be like, oh, you want to get married? Like, you want to take that time to introduce yourself and show the value that you have to offer.
Definitely, definitely. And I like a good example I've seen of that kind of welcome and greeting you were talking about is when people do a pinned welcome post, like on Facebook or, you know, wherever that might be. And it's or perhaps it's a highlight on Instagram or on TikTok. But it's just whether you're a person, like an actual individual or a brand, like, who are you? People should get that sense from reading your copy, from just kind of reviewing your bio and the different things you post about. It might be a little more straightforward if you're like a small business owner and you perhaps make products that you sell via Etsy or something like that. But then when you go through, it just makes sense in the end that you would talk about like who you are specifically. And if you're not sure who your brand is or what kind of persona you're trying to demonstrate, that's definitely a question to ask about your social strategy.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that. Yeah. You know, it just, it lays down the groundwork for what you're trying to, where you're going, what direction is your content even going to go in, right? So that's the first thing you should do. Let's get into the first thing you shouldn't do. All right, Courtney, would you like to introduce this one?
Yeah, so automated messaging is something that we kind of we're big advocates of. We're always big advocates of automating whenever we can. But our caution with this don't is don't use automated messaging the wrong way. So when we say use, for example, set up your FAQs on Facebook, we don't mean just having one generic response so that anytime someone submits a direct message to you, it just says, hey, we'll get back to you within 24 hours. Maybe you don't, you know, maybe that's the same message every time and the person gets kind of caught at that stage in your funnel. What you want to do is actually fill out the automation like to the full extent. You can actually preload questions that people might ask into Facebook. So when someone asks, what are your hours, for example, very typical, it will just reply for them. And then it can kind of provide a link even and have a sequence of questions if you're using a bot like ManyChat. So it's really a chance where someone's interested in talking to you and you should be trying to pull them further into your marketing communications, not just leaving them dead in your, you know, in your direct messages.
Absolutely. You can really, you want to nurture the relationship and you want to be able to offer that accessibility or that response, but you also have to be thoughtful in your approach. So make sure that you take the time to properly set up those chatbots if you do choose to use them, that it aligns with your funnel structure. And then also, like you said, it's not the same message over and over and over again that they're getting, right?
For sure.
Paige, are you with us?
Can you hear me?
Yay!
Okay, I ditched the AirPods. I'm just using my laptop right now, so.
It's always something to do with the headphones. It's always something.
It's so true. Like, know, but that's the beauty of doing a live show, right, everyone?
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. April has a good comment there about automated messaging. Automated messaging done wrong can seem a little robotic, but if the sequence leads me to talk to a human when I need them, I love that. And that's exactly it, April. It shouldn't just be some generic dead end that leaves someone there with no help. You know, there's definitely a customer service side to social media. I think you would both agree these days. Yeah. You know, it's definitely not just about reaching new audiences, but about taking care of your existing ones, which tends to get neglected in the marketing strategy side of things. But
so let's get into the second do. All right, Paige.
Okay, so do listen to your followers. So as we know, engagement is a two-way street and you really need to think about being social on social media. That's the whole point. So if your followers say they have a request for content that they want to see, or maybe they want you to demonstrate how to use a product, or even answer questions in a simple video, it's just a nice way to show that you are listening to your audience and you do want to help them and you're willing to basically do whatever it takes to make them happy in a sense. But I think it's really important because I've been on the side as a customer where I ask a small business owner, hey, do you mind making a video just showing how we actually use this product, if it's something confusing or whatnot? And most of the time they hop on, they happily do it. Then it also kind of promotes that relationship and it kind of lets other people know that they can ask you questions and you're willing to answer them. So it's all about being social on social media.
That's exactly it. Well, it's so, very well said. Because often people get really stuck in the posting structure, right? They're like, oh, I've got to post lots of stuff. And they don't realize that those days were like back in like the 2000s or like late 90s, you know, when social media was just at its infancy. Now it's more about community engagement. Like, how can you really get in there and build the conversation around your brand or your product or your service, and really develop brand advocates around that? If you're not talking back and forth with them and you're just talking at them, you're losing a key opportunity to really build, you know, a community around your brand. Pippa has a comment here. Your clients' questions can be used as a great source of content. Exactly.
Definitely. Yeah. Yep. And I think we see that in the new features they're rolling out with the reply, reply to comments with a reel or on TikTok as well. Like, they're just, I love that they're doing that, honestly, because it's very easy for people to post and ghost, as they say now. we used to call it post and pray. Basically, just posting content is not enough, no matter what quality that content is. And it used to be kind of a nice to have to do the community management half of social media. And usually it's about time, to be honest. I think a lot of marketers are pressed for time. But I think I love that they're just like trying to find ways to just like include that within the very content and the way you use it, because people will get lost and get discouraged is what will happen, you know? So it's good for them too, for onboarding users, but good for us marketers as well. So
definitely. There was this actually this really great book called Love Your Haters by Jay Baer. And if you haven't read it, I highly recommend it if you're looking to get into social media marketing or content marketing, because he talks about how when people leave negative comments, which is really, I would say, a pain point for a lot of businesses to even get onto social. They're like, well, what if somebody says something bad about my brand? What do I do? And I'm like, that is gold. Because without that, you're missing an opportunity to really understand what is working or not working. How can you adjust your content or even your product or service to better serve your customers? So it's really important to take the time to understand, you know, what your customers are complaining about. So that way you can take that pure data and actually leverage it to build your business or even help the content that you're developing. So yeah, definitely.
Cool. Yeah, I think that makes sense. And it's definitely, like Pippa said, it's kind of a no-brainer that these are the FAQs you're looking for. You know, I would take those and be putting them on your website and your frequently asked questions. I'd be thinking about if there's a place for this in your onboarding or advertising strategy, because these are real people with real problems. And I just hate when people delete the comment or even hide it, because like I like to reply to it and showcase it that A, you're a company who actually replies to this, and B, like maybe someone else also had this like pain point and you're now answering it. So, you know, depending on what it is, if it's like there are certain lines we used to run, like a political account. Yeah, there are lines with hate speech and such, but we're talking about like general, like someone says, oh, this product sucks, you know, something like that. But
yeah, definitely. I once had a customer who got on and who was like, oh, I hate this product. I hate it. And like, I like mine better. And I said, well, what kind of brand do you have? Well, I have this brand. I said, it sounds to me like you have a great product, you know, but did you know ours can do this? And he was like, no, I didn't know that. And he goes, oh, maybe I'll check it out. So you can actually flip those negative comments into something positive and actually take as an opportunity to educate your consumers on something that they may not be aware of that your product offers over the competition. So anyway.
Yeah, I know. All right. Something Dan likes to say is that the trolls or the naysayers can become your biggest advocates if you just speak to them. So I've heard him say that. Shout out to Dan.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so let's get to our second don't. Okay, Paige, why don't you take this one as well?
Okay, yeah. So I want to assess about numbers. So a lot of people, especially new to social media, you can get caught up and your followers. That's usually the biggest thing that people seem to care about early on. But you know, if you have 1,000 followers and you have 3 likes on your photo, the engagement is not there. The ratio isn't there. So you just have to kind of change your thought process and just think, if you have 100 followers and you have say half of that are engaging with you, 50 likes on a photo, like that's amazing. It's a lot better than having 1,000 followers and 3 likes. So you really just have to change your mind into knowing that it's not all about the numbers, it's about the engagement and whether your customers or your audience feels comfortable engaging with you or asking you questions and just interacting with you as a brand. So just don't focus on the hard numbers because you're never going to be satisfied. You're always going to want more.
Maybe get desperate and start doing things like purchasing followers or engagement, things like that, yeah. Which we don't typically advocate. So, but yeah, that's really well said, Paige. Yeah. And that's I don't know about YouTube, but when I go to a social channel, the very first thing I look at is how much engagement is on their like most recent post and a post from like a few months back. But that's me just going through people's accounts like a crazy person. But
Stacey, you gotta say you have that analogy about going to a party. I forget.
Oh yeah, I will
always say it.
Yeah, I have some weird things that I say here at the Hive. But Dan's got a really great comment here. That's right, quality over quantity. That's the key, definitely, Dan. You know, because okay, so now I'm gonna get into my party analogy. Okay, so I always say this when it comes to the difference between vanity metrics and true metrics that matter for social media is when you think of reach, it's usually a high number. So it's usually the number of people at a party. So you could have 1 million people at a party. But if only one person talks to you, who cares? However, if you have 1 million people at a party and 50,000 people talk to you, which is going to be a very busy night, mind you, that's a good thing because that means that people are actually interested in what you have to say. So you have to look at reach and engagement the same way. Reach being like you could reach 100,000 people, but if you only get 2 comments on all the content that you've taken the time to produce, so what? But if you get, I don't know, 40 comments on one post and 100 comments on another one, that's gold. That's what you want. And those are true non-vanity social metrics that you want to be concentrating on.
For sure. I like that point, Stacey, and that like, we're not saying don't look at any metrics, you know, you have to, you know, look at what's important to you, but yeah, there are certain metrics that just aren't important in that way. Especially if you're like an incredibly niche topic, you would imagine, you know, your goal isn't to have millions of followers, like a celebrity account, for example. If you're like a local dentist, you know, in a population of like 100,000 person town, you got to think of like the size in which like your audience is and who you're actually wanting to speak to. So I think people should keep that in mind. Otherwise, the dangerous thing about vanity metrics is they can be discouraging and they can stop you from trying or thinking there's a value in the channel for you. So just always be testing. That's what I'll
say. there's no like failure. That's another thing too. Some people will look at a poor performing month or week, whatever, how they're measuring their metrics for their account. Take it as a key learning, like what worked, what didn't work, evaluate it. When we do reports here for our clients, it's very important that we kind of do an overview of what we tried for the month, what we learned from the month, and what we're going to do to optimize moving forward. And you always are testing and learning as you go along. It's an iterative process. It's not like you're done, you know, like I gave you a strategy. Well, great. But you know, how are you optimizing that? So
yeah.
Cool. All right, ladies, let's get into, I think it's number 3.
Do? Yeah.
Courtney, why don't you take this one for us?
Yeah. Do separate personal and business. So this tip is a little more for like directly for the small business owner, because we've seen it many times when perhaps you're a real estate agent, for example, and you're starting, you know, to use your social media accounts more for business, and you're faced with the decision of, do I create a new Instagram account and start from zero? Do I turn this one into a business account? Do I mash them together? We really recommend just creating a dedicated account for your business, just for 2 reasons. One, you know, some content, while you should show your personality on your business account, some content just might not be right there. You know, maybe it's your child's birthday party or something, or photos you want to share with like personal contacts. The other more technical reason is when you're setting up your account in these social channels, you actually select business or personal, and that changes features that are available to you and different things like that. So just really, if you're serious about creating like an omni-channel strategy and really including your social media channels into perhaps your email strategy and your advertising, we really recommend just keeping those separate and having your own dedicated account.
Absolutely. Very good point, because I mean, while we all think your dog is really cute and you had a really amazing dinner last night, you got to understand there's a difference between your business account and the content you're serving there versus your personal account. I think it's still okay to show a little bit of your personality on your business account. You don't want to seem like you're a robot or that you're too rigid, but just within reason and understanding how that works, with, you know, weaves in with your brand.
Yeah. And at the beginning, it might be okay. But typically where we see it become a problem is down the road when perhaps you've, you know, gone viral on some element and now you have a whole bunch of audience members who are looking for a specific type of content. And then their posts, you know what I mean? And it just ends up getting more and more difficult that way. Yeah, not that, you know, people wouldn't want to see, your customers don't want to see a cute picture of your dog, but it definitely, as you grow, it just gets a little more difficult. So,
100%. All right, let's get on to don't number three.
Yeah.
Just keeping track here. I'll bring it up. All right. Okay. Paige, why don't you introduce this one?
Okay. Yeah. So here we talk about don't overly brand your page. So some companies, some businesses, they might just focus on, you know, we need to be sell, or we need to brand absolutely everything that we post on our page. And that just takes away from the sense of authenticity. And, you know, for some people, it can get annoying after a while. For instance, if you're posting a meme onto your social channel, you don't necessarily have to put your logo on it. There is a time and place, but we do, at least for me, I think a good ratio is like an 80 to 20. So if you have 80% of like fun educational posts on your page and then leave the other 20% to be like true branded graphics and content and whatnot, it just kind of, you know, it breaks it up. We see advertisements all day, every day. So people love just coming to social media to have a break from all of that. So just incorporating both is really important, but remembering not to overbrand yourself.
Definitely. And I think the funny part is people are thinking like it, first of all, maybe Stacey can attest to this. It's kind of an old school thing to do. Back when like I first started, you always like overput your logo on your graphics and things like that. It was, it kind of, you know, it makes you look outdated, I think. And then also any ad or post you're making on social media has your name, like your username and your logo there. It's like, you know, your icon. So it's kind of a, you know, from a visual like user experience perspective, it's funny because it's like a duplicate. As though like Paige and I are having a conversation and halfway through I tell her, I'm Courtney. She's like, I know I'm following your page. We're talking. It sounds, that's basically the equivalent of constantly like talking like that on social media, even in your graphics or copy. But
yeah, it's also, it's funny too, because it's like, just say they're posting a meme. They're like, okay, we're trying to be funny and relatable, but remember we made this meme. It's just like, it just takes away from the funniness or innocence that it's supposed to be. And it's just, I don't know, it comes off very like dry and
it's kind of like the clutch marks of like branding. And like, I understand they want the desire to do it, but it's definitely just like that last inability to let go.
I think it brings to like a key point too. You have to remember that it's important to stay on brand and be consistent, but is there a way that you can convey the why of your brand or the message behind your brand without having to slap your logo on everything? So is it a product, you know, example? Is it, you know, doing a video on the benefits of your product or, you know, the solutions it solves? Is it doing like a fun Q&A or question answer period or running a poll? Like, understanding that the idea with social, like Paige was saying before, is to be social. It's not about, you know, Russell Oliver, I buy your jewelry kind of advertising. It's a completely different way to handle that kind of interaction. So like slapping your logo on everything, yes, it makes you look outdated a bit, but it also, what purpose does it serve, really? Like, you can see, I know what account I'm on, you know, I can see my name underneath. So just maybe for those that struggle or are wondering how, okay, well, that's great, how do I work around that? I would just recommend, like, try to think of the why of your brand, like the solution, and build content around that versus saying, okay, well, we'll put a quote with our logo. Maybe put the quote and put your colors with that quote, but you don't need to put the logo, right? It'll still look nice. It's consistent with your brand, but it's more tastefully done.
Yeah, there can be branding still for definitely, like you said, from a design perspective, or perhaps in the way that, like, what the actual creative piece is. Like, is it a picture of a product, your product in use? Is it like a showcase of your platform? Like, one of my favorite examples right now is SEMrush is doing, or SEMrush is doing a content series where they're finding like hilarious search queries and featuring it, and they like reply to them, and they're really funny, and it shows like it's a screenshot of the actual like magic keyword magic tool interface. So like, in a funny way, they're showcasing these hilarious search, like what people are searching, and it'll show you like how many people searched it, and they're laughing about it, but it's their product, like they're showing it off. And I think that's like, you know, that's kind of where people should aspire to be when they're creating social content like that. And that branding, like, I still consider that branded. It's a screenshot of their product, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And Dan actually has a really good question for us. He was like, his autocorrect, but that was the wrong one. Does that apply for social ads too, in terms of the branding piece? What do you guys think?
Yeah, Paige, what would you say? Logos on social ads.
When I'm designing, I usually put logos on the ads. Yeah. But again, like, usually it's your own page that's posting it usually. I always do, because I think that's more of a commercial. It's more of a selling point. You are trying to get people to go to your page, or say you're promoting a job posting. You want to have that element on there, because I think it's more professional to have it on there. But when we're talking about social media, I prefer to take it off, because that's just more social. It's more laid back. It's more authentic. So that's my thoughts.
Yeah, you're talking about like a Google display ad or something, right, Paige, when you put the logo, or like perhaps a video sequence, like having a bumper at the end of a video is a bit different. But yeah, on social media, the logo is already there. For, I assume, like 90, there's so many formats now, but most of the formats on social platforms, like it's already there in your user like icon, you know, and the name. So,
I think that if you're going to, let's say, do run ads on Facebook and on Instagram, you don't just using that as one of many channels. I wouldn't think that there's a really big need to put the logo on there. I think as long as you're like brand colors and, you know, the messaging is very on point with your brand, it's going to show in the feed. It's going to have your name on it already. And it's just kind of like, okay, we get it. You're X brand, right? So, it's kind of a pet peeve of mine, along with people taking pictures of food. I don't know why, but like, you know, I think that's something to, you know, maybe just look at how you can tweak that a bit.
Yeah, less is more. Just make a graphic, take one logo away, one a day, and you're good.
One a day. Design recommended by Paige.
So Dan, I don't know if that helps answer your question, but we forgive you for your autocorrect, and we were totally picking up what you were putting down. So keep the questions coming. We love it. All right. Let's move on to the next one. Okay. Do designate a social media time for engaging. I think Paige's turn is up.
Yeah. So I think it's really important, especially as a small business. You know, some people might feel like, oh, social media is so much work. Like, I have to post, I have to plan, and I have to engage. But the engagement is one of the most important parts, because again, you're being social on social media. So a tip I would think is helpful is if you just dedicate, say, 15 minutes, an hour, however long you want to dedicate to your platform, just to engage with your audience, answer their questions, answer your DMs. You can like You can like their posts, you can reshare their content, but really engaging with your audience every day, even for a short period of time, does help you build those relationships and increases engagement as time goes on. Like we said, you don't have to obsess about the numbers, but with the numbers that you do have, you want to make sure that you're forming a really good, positive, valuable relationship with them. So yeah, just dedicating a little bit of time every day, can even be 15 minutes, but it just shows that you do really care and you do really want to communicate with the people that care about your brand.
Exactly. That's a really good point, Paige. I think too, it's like, you really want to take the time, like we were talking about, like you were saying, not get too caught up in the numbers, but at the same time, it's really important to understand when your fans or your community is online. So like, let's say you're into gardening, you're probably going to be looking at an audience that's, you know, really engaged very early in the morning, where if we're trying to do a post like later at night, you might not get the same kind of interactivity. So you need to like understand when they're there. So that way you're also kind of providing a service by offering that engagement, because they might have questions in real time that they want to ask you. They might be DMing you or adding comments. Don't you want to be, you know, active and engaged in the most critical time that your audience is actually engaging with your brand? I think the short answer is yes, right? So it's something to definitely think about, and I would recommend actioning. What are your thoughts, Courtney?
Yeah, I'm just over here nodding, being like, yep. That's it. I try and like, you know, they're called community management check-ins, you know, because we have to have terms for everything as marketers. But when you go to check in, the one thing I will caution is obviously like your own personal accounts, you can get sucked in. So like I try to set 15-minute increments, and I go in just as I would on my personal account. And I try to set like specific goals, not just liking things, but for example, in each check-in, I leave at least 5 comments, and not just like, you know, flame emoji, like a few like actual comments, typically a question, so I can start a conversation. It helps them build their engagement. It, you know, I actually start speaking to people. I know Dan Duran is one of the, we always chat via Honeypot social media. He's a great, great engager of ours. Yeah, I think that there are also tactical ways you can do it as well. So one example is on Instagram. If you know you have a post that's scheduled for, you know, 10 a.m., go on at like 9 a.m. or 9:30 and engage with the hashtags you've used, or, you know, any accounts that you think would be relevant or interested in it, things like that. Trying to like warm your account at certain times, it can even get that strategic. So I know I, you know, people have tested this with the algorithm, you know, and you only have so many hours in the day, but try and think of using your account as you would your own personal account. So that's what I would say as a rule of thumb for my community management.
Exactly.
Dan's laughing at us now, but he knows.
Is. He is. You know what we're talking about. All right, let's get into the next don't. All right, Courtney, you want to take this one?
Yeah, don't spam post. So what we mean by that is when you spam post, perhaps you have, you know, 7 different channels. You know, your business has an Instagram account, a TikTok, a LinkedIn, a Facebook page. And then you want to post on Google My Business for your organic search and traffic as well. It's a lot of channels, and you might be very tempted to create the same post and just post the exact same thing, you know, maybe minus a couple hashtags or two across all those channels. And at the same time, and that's kind of my biggest beef, is at the exact same time. People can't be on all 7 channels at once. So even if I did like the same post on Facebook or Instagram, like I wouldn't be on both at the same time. So it's impossible. So not only should you consider scheduling things at different times of day. So like Stacy just mentioned, you with your business, you might know because of your industry, maybe weekends are better for you. Maybe, you know, maybe there's a certain time of day, 9 a.m., 3 p.m. and 5 p.m. are the supposed holy grail of scheduling, that a lot of people kind of start around those times and test from there. Yeah, I think that that's kind of from the scheduling timing side, that makes sense. But also from the content side, consider that you would definitely not be posting the same thing on TikTok that you would be on LinkedIn, for example. So this is when like planning your content out and scheduling it is really going to help you. and it's going to save you time in the long run and really just enhance your strategy. But that's my spiel on the spam posting, Stacey.
So Dan has a really good question. How do you deal with trolls other than it being the grumpy old troll under the bridge from Dora? Paige, how would you handle a troll?
I would just block them. I honestly haven't dealt with it a lot, but from what we were saying earlier, or what Stacy mentioned that Dan says, is that trolls can sometimes be gold. So if they are kind of giving you constructive criticism, you can take that and turn it around. If they're just being outright rude, I haven't dealt with that. Maybe you guys have before. Hopefully you haven't, but yeah,
we used to have a really crazy account at Honeypot that posted like literally intentional things to try to get debates going that were really like heated hot button topics. So community managing that was like a once in a lifetime experience, like 500 comments a day of really heated people. So like sometimes if people are having a debate, it's clearly, you know, gone off the rails, you might want to hide that and just kind of like let that go. But if it's a troll, like someone says, your product sucks, I tried it and it didn't work, you know, or whatever the service might be, this service sucks here, something like that. I always reply 100%, and I reply with something. If I'm working on behalf of a company, I definitely write out the reply and make sure that they're comfortable with it first.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons, because it's typically something sensitive. But I do not hide them and I don't delete it. Just deleting it is the worst thing to do. They will come back, see that you've deleted it, and then make another comment even angrier, and everyone else gets to see that. So keep in mind, it's replying to the comment is also about the people who are watching this as well. They see that you replied, and that's actually like a respected thing to reply to a negative comment. Mm-hmm. If the person then replies again and is like, nope, like I hate you, you know, then I will reply and try and take it offline. As we say, I try to give them an email that we can reach out or ask them to DM the page, so it's taken under the public eye. I don't just abandon them, but I try to take it off the public space at that point.
100%. I was just going to say that's my technique is, so usually if you've got a grumpy old troll who is messaging your account, it's due to the fact that maybe they've had a poor experience. It's a customer service issue. Maybe they haven't felt like they've been heard. So now they're just getting angry, kind of like how a toddler would be. So, you know, rule number one, something that I, you know, really coach to our team here at Honeypot is immediately try to take them out of the public feed and throw them into DMs. So what I mean by that is you encourage them, like you were just saying, Courtney, to bring the, you know, conversation to the side. So you say, oh, like, you know, thank you. Always thank them for taking the time to, you know, communicate their problem or their issue. Say, we'd love to investigate this for you. Could you please direct message us with your information so we can look into this further for you? And if they really want their solution, like a solution, or they're really looking for a resolution, they will go into the DMs and then you can take it from there and work with your customer service team. Or if you're, you know, doing social media for a brand, work with their team to best make sure that you're pointing them in the right direction to get the information that they need. If they're just a grumpy smurf and they're angry with the world, that's when you just got to hide those comments, because I call them like not necessarily trolls. I call them, what's the word I use? They're kind of like serial angry people, you know? So they're mad at everybody. Usually when you go to their feed, they're mad at every other brand they can think of. So you can't do much about that. You can't change people. You can only, you know, make sure that you're providing a solution, that you're looking for a way to educate them. You're also, like Courtney said, it's very, very important to make sure that you are responding, because other people will see that. They'll be like, oh, this brand or this business is actually very vested and interested in what their customers have to say. They are responsive. It's not just like a one and done, we're going to post something and then bounce, right? So yeah, trolls are interesting for sure. Okay.
Yeah, I've been on like business pages, say I'm looking at like a lipstick brand or something, and I'll go into their comments. I'll just see like the vibe of what the audience is like. And if I do see a complaint, but I see that the company has responded and said, oh, we'd love to hear more, shoot us a message, I don't focus on the bad thing that the customer said. I'm just like, oh, okay, they have good customer service. They try and resolve their issues. So I feel like if you at least need to respond to them, like you guys both said, just try and resolve the issue. Some people just have deeper rooted issues that you can't fix, but at least try.
Yeah, huge credibility. Yeah, definitely, Paige. I do the same thing if I happen to look at an Instagram ad that I'm shopping around. Definitely. It's like the new review, you know, looking at the comment section. It's kind of funny.
All right, girls, let's get into the next do. I think this is our final do.
Yeah. Do, and this one, do batch create your content. This is a big one, or important one.
Yeah, so it's really important. And this is what I love about this tip, is that it's really about helping you work smarter, not harder. So by dedicating a time, whether it's like every Tuesday of the week, or maybe you just do one big batch for the whole month, by having a dedicated time to batch create your content, it's freeing you up to do the scheduling, to do all the community management that we've been talking about that's so important. And it also kind of helps you lay it out almost like how they used to do back in the old days with like magazine layouts, to understand, okay, what's the frequency of your posting schedule? You know, what different tactics are you trying in each channel? Which make the most sense? So you can kind of almost like, it's like creating, like doing a recipe or cooking. You can see all the ingredients out in front of you, and how are you going to, you know, make different pieces of content that serve your goals the best way.
For sure. Yeah. And it may seem daunting. Definitely. People are probably like, make it all at once. But, like, you know, you might be like collecting and saving ideas and things like that, and adding to that pile of, you know, content throughout the month, and then like producing it and scheduling it. It's honestly, the scheduling is what's key. You're trying to save yourself time, and you're trying to strengthen your strategy. Because if it's, you know, 2 p.m. and you haven't posted yet, and you're like, you know, what am I going to post today? It's like, what kind of you can see the strategy is just not going to be as well if you block it out ahead of time. Like Stacy mentioned, we look at a whole calendar, and we consider things like, are there special days that are relevant to us that we should be part of speaking, like the conversation about? Are there, you know, different content pillars that we need to put in there, which are reoccurring posts that we would make every week? Mm-hmm. And are there new things you're testing too? So
exactly. And if anybody is ever like a creative type, like us three ladies are, I think you guys could probably relate that it's very, very hard for us to not to jump from task to task to task. Like if you have to really get into that zone, I always laughed when I first got into my career, how people just figure you can snap your fingers and be creative. And it's not like that. It comes in bits and spurts, and you need to create space so that way you can really focus your energies on not just the tactical stuff, but the really creative pieces that you're trying to develop, so that you stand out in the feed, so that you make a difference. And so by having that dedicated time and that space to do it, you can just go nuts, but in a good way. Right. So
for sure.
Cool. All right. Let's get to what I believe is our last don't here.
Our last one. We're almost on time. All right.
Let's go. I think it's Paige this time.
Okay. Let's go. I might be wrong. So don't abuse hashtags. So the last two slides that we talked about, don't spam post, and do plan out your content. This also goes hand in hand. So when you are like planning out your content, you're planning everything from the graphic to the caption to the hashtag. And some people have the habit of turning every single word from their caption into a hashtag or an emoji. And that's not what you want to do at all. So depending on the platform, you want to pick maybe 5 to 10 hashtags that are relevant to your post or your business that you can incorporate into your caption. And you can hide them. I know some people tend to not use hashtags because they say that they look ugly. So you have some people who overuse them and some people who don't use them at all. So just finding the ones that work for you is really important in reach. I have, in my own experience, I've searched hashtags and then came across really awesome pages that have used those hashtags. So just understanding which ones can benefit you is the key. Don't overuse and don't underuse.
Exactly.
5 to 10 is like for Instagram or like TikTok. I think that number is right on there. I know I saw a report because of all the hashtag changes in the algorithms last year, because people were putting, 35 plus hashtags on, and then Instagram went and recommended like 5. So everyone was kind of skeptical about that and like really didn't want to give up their hashtags. And then I believe Later Media did a study on it where they did like a full testing, and they found that literally the number of hashtags didn't impact like the reach and performance, and that the main thing that it was about was whether it was a niche hashtag or really broad. So I would say, if you're going to use any hashtags, make them as specific as possible to that post. That's what I would say.
Yeah, like I think too, it's like understanding the social channel in which hashtags are relevant. Like, I wouldn't put 5 hashtags or 10 hashtags on a Facebook post, for instance.
No,
it's going to look spammy. It's not going to look like it's legit. Now I'm going to look for maybe 2-3 hashtags on a Facebook post, and we tend to use a high, medium, low kind of hashtag strategy, where the whole idea behind hashtag strategies is to make sure that you have the ability to reach a wide audience, medium-sized audience, and very laser-focused target audience. So let's take dogs, for instance, probably because I'm looking at mine right now. But, maybe have hashtag dog. Now, I'm going to be one in a sea of millions of people by using that hashtag. The likelihood that someone's going to see my post is probably not very great, but it's there, right? and then I might go for a medium popularity hashtag, which might be lover of dog walks or something, like something that is popular still, but not like super popular. Like, so now I'm kind of starting to narrow in on who my audience is. And then I'm going to use a hyper-focused hashtag, which might be Westies of Instagram with a heart emoji or something. And now maybe it's a very hyper-focused, and I'm going to probably get my content seen. So by doing that high, medium, low type of, formula for hashtags, you're using the appropriate amount of hashtags, but you're using them in a way that is going to be strategically smart for your brand or your business. Mic drop.
For sure.
Cool. All right. Well, this has been a really great show, everyone. And I can't thank you enough for, tuning in. I'm going to ask Courtney to wrap it up for us here.
Yeah, so we were, when we were talking about this topic and all these things, the social media tips that we have, it brought to mind that like it's always evolving, and it's important that, as marketers, that we keep up with, not only like what audio trends and things like that and features, but also in the way people are naturally using the platforms as well. I love Paige's example of people omitting hashtags for the aesthetic, for reasons like that, something people have been doing for a while, but, make sure that you're keeping up with those things, so that when you are using it, that's the thing that's going to make you look like silly most of all, right? As if you are misusing a trend or something like that. So just try to, try to even keep using it like on a personal level, so you can see what other brands are doing, what other people are doing. Just help infuse the creativity in the content you make too.
Well said. Exactly. Well, we got to thank everybody for tuning in today. Don't forget to hit the subscribe or like, comment or share. We actually post this so that you can watch it as many times as you'd like. So if you have any questions that you didn't think of right now, but you have for us later, feel free to comment. We'll be sure to answer them and get back to you. And yeah, so thanks for tuning in to the five do's and five don'ts of social media for small business. Are you guys up to anything exciting this weekend?
No.
Going to my wedding dress alterations appointment. Oh. So fingers crossed for me. I bought it like 5 months ago before the winter.
Oh, I'm sure it's amazing. That's awesome. So, well, you'll have to send us pictures and let us know.
All right.
Okay, everyone, we'll have a great weekend and we'll see you next week for episode 218 of Live at the Hive. As Dan always says, peace.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, guys.